We've been taught how not to use nature as our food and medicine. So we're trying to reverse that right here, right now.
Today, we forage food and medicine with my friend, Crystal Stevens.
Hi, thank you for having me. I am Crystal Stevens, an herbalist and a farmer in the St. Louis region. I co-founded the Tend and Flourish School of Botanicals, and my husband and I live on Flourish Farmstead, where we operate Flourish Folk School. We teach people all kinds of things about foraging and plant walks, composting, gardening, heritage gardening, lots of different things.
When you guys are out foraging for your food and medicine, because you want to kick Big Pharma out of your life, right? And even the grocery stores. So we want to remember a few things.
Yeah, so there's safety and there's ethics. The ethics of foraging is that you don't want to take the wild plants that might be rare or at risk, like all the ginseng and the golden seal. While there is value to it, you want to leave it for the ecosystem because that's really important. We need these ecosystems. So the ethics are usually you take a fourth of a very abundant plant. So for instance, some tree medicine where there's lots of trees in that one grove, you can take several branches, but if it's one plant out in the savanna or the prairie, don't take it, don't forage it. There's other things you might be able to forage. Or if it's violet or dandelion or dead nettle, purple dead nettle, it's gonna be abundant and prolific and you're welcome to take as much as you want if it's in your own backyard. There's also some safety concerns. So the safety concerns are that you don't want to ever forage on private property or places that say no trespassing or nature preserves where you're not allowed to pick. You know, there's many wildlife refuges that you don't want to pick at as well. You don't want to pick along roadsides that have heavy traffic. You don't want to pick along railroad tracks or bike trails because they spray those areas. And if you use Roundup in your yard, please don't.
No.
Because we love the bees, right? If you use Roundup in your yard, you don't want to forage in your yard. So a few other safety concerns. If you have a dog in your yard, you know, just be mindful of where it uses the restroom. You don't want to be harvesting a bunch of dandelion, make a fresh pesto without washing it, and you might get a parasite from the dog poop in the yard. So just be mindful of the safety and the ethics of foraging.
First thing we're going to talk about is the tree, some tree medicine. And during fall, persimmons, they ripen. So there's a wise tale that says that you could predict the winters, how they're going to be, by when you cut this open, you open the seed, and for where you are. So the persimmon has to be local. Like, you can't do a Missouri persimmon like we have here and predict your winter where it's going to be in, like, Colorado. So it has to be a local persimmon. When you cut it open and it looks like a spoon, that means you're gonna have a lot of snow. If you cut it open and it kind of looks like a fork, that means kind of a fluffy, a mild winter. Or if it's a straight kind of knife, it's gonna be a piercing, piercing cold winter. And what else can we talk about?
So the persimmons are an edible wild food. You get them when they drop. So this would not be considered a ripe persimmon. When they're soft and squishy and fall on the ground, that's when they're ripe. They're very sweet, high in antioxidants. You can actually use the leaves when they're in their green stage to make a delicious and antioxidant-rich tea. You can't use these yellow leaves for the persimmon leaf tea. You would want to use the green leaves for the persimmon leaf tea. They're too far gone in the fall. This is another tree medicine, a sassafras tree. It's also another understory tree. You can tell that it's a sassafras. It has mitten-shaped leaves. It has simple leaves. And it has leaves that have three, like a dinosaur foot. So that all from that one tree. You can eat these young, tender leaves. So this is a baby sprout that popped up. You can eat these young, tender leaves and make tea from them. You can also eat in the spring the young flowering buds. They look like little yellow balls and they are really wonderful in a tea. They also are used to make filet gumbo. So people use the young leaves and dry them and grind them up to thicken gumbo. So it's long historical uses. There's also long historical uses in the roots, but they're not really used so much anymore because of the chemical constituent safrole. So we just focus on the leaves and the young tender buds.
And soda.
Oh yeah,
right. They can make soda out of it too.
Yep.
And see, that's the cool thing about all these things is they are loaded in so many wonderful nutrients and vitamins and minerals that we need. So, and we can get it from our own backyard.
Absolutely.
The easiest ones you guys can identify of our trees is our white pine.
White pines are high in vitamin C. You don't want to add too much heat to the needles when you're making a tea. So you bring the water to the boil and then let it sit for a little bit and then add your pine needles. And you can let it steep for, about 20 minutes, and it gives you a really good burst of vitamin C. You can also use cedar. They have the little juniper berries on them. They're in the juniper family. They have those little berries that are used to make gin. You can use those in a medicinal way. But you can also make a tea from these cedar leaves as well. Just cut the little tips of the leaves and steep them, and it'll make an antibacterial, antiviral tea blend.
That pine needle tea is pretty handy too. They used to use it with the sailors to stop the scurvy and stuff because they couldn't get any of those vegetables when they're traveling way up north in Alaska and all that.
So a couple examples of some evergreens. Now we're gonna move on to some shrubs. And this one here is probably one of my favorites, and they're all around our property. And during this time of year, they turn beautiful, usually bright red. We had a very hard frost last night, so they kind of got a little more burgundy. And what is this?
Sumac.
Sumac. It's a wonderful, wonderful plant.
Now don't get the poison sumac.
No, you don't want that poison sumac. So the way you can identify it is the good sumac has red berries. And the poison sumac has white berries. And I have never seen white sumac, poisonous sumac, around here either. Have you?
No,
I have never seen it. But you don't want the poison sumac, it's white berries. The red berries is the one you want. And what can you use this for?
Ooh, I like to do a spice blend, so you can take these little berries and pop them off and grind them in a food processor. Blend a spice blend, and you can add them to salts and make a sumac salt. They're good for making syrups, the medicinal syrup, to flavor mocktails and cocktails as well.
Because it has a really, like, very lemony type flavor. I know I'm Armenian, and it's a very Mediterranean. They use it a lot there. So it's wonderful to grind up if you want that lemon flavor. If you don't have lemons at your disposal, this is a great thing that you can use in those spice blends. So I use this a lot.
We learned about poison versus non-poison sumac, the benefits of it. Now we go to our beautiful superstar. She's still pretty even though she's a little shriveled up from the frost. Elderberry, one of the most medicinal berries on the planet, super high in antioxidants, anthocyanins, those really amazing nutrients that we need for immune boosting, they're antioxidant. This plant is a survivor. It is amazing, you can find it now. And as soon as these leaves dry up, you can make stem cuttings. Check out Terry's videos on how to make elderberry stem cuttings.
From River Hills Harvest, right?
Yeah.
And then one thing about the elderberry is you can use the flowers when they're blooming in the summertime. You can use the berries, you can make syrups, you can make tinctures. I mean, there's so many things that you can do with this. It's crazy. Your juices. So this is a plant that's definitely, if you guys are propagating and starting to put on your property or know where you can find it around your area, it's one that you definitely need to find because it's found all over the world.
There's the European elderberries and there's the American elderberries. And the way you guys know which one they are is if you're in North America and you got elderberries, you got the North American elderberries, not the European ones. Also, these elderberries are like, they grow in ditches, they grow all around us and all over the places. Just be careful where you're getting them from, but you could start your elderberry stuff for the total free cheap just by going out and foraging, cutting some little snippings and clippings. We have a video about it right there if you guys want to watch that video and learn how to make your own clippings for elderberry. And now's the time to do it.
Of Multiflora rose, which is an invasive species. Multiflora rose has lots of little thorns. It's very aggressive. It grows along ditches and roadways. It'll take over really healthy forests if you don't manage it. So you have to be aware of it. It also grows along riparian ecosystems along riverways. It has these amazing rose hips that are super high in vitamin C. So you pop one of these off and you can eat it or make a tea from it. Super high in vitamin C, really amazing. The leaves, when they're very young and tender, you can eat them for another additional vitamin C support. And the flowers, the roses, are edible. And you can make a tea from them.
And so, they're beautiful. And a lot around here, I know a lot of the farmers can't stand them because they go up around their fences. But they are beautiful. It's a rose. And a lot of you guys, you know how wonderful rose hips are for like tea and medicinally. these are a great way to get those rose hips.
Absolutely, free medicine.
Yep, right there in your yard. Next we have your wild blackberries. And you definitely know these because they're all over the place. They have little prickles on them and they are very invasive. I know many people are like, oh, get these things out of there, but they're not just there to be a nuisance. They are there, they have so many benefits to them. You know, why don't you tell us some of the things it can do?
Rich in phytonutrients and vitamins and minerals. The leaves can be used interchangeably like you would red raspberry leaf for a menstrual support formula, for cramps, for as a uterine tonic. It's an astringent herb, so you can take it to dry, draw, and shrink swollen tissue, and also use it as a poultice or a fomentation on burns and cuts because it has that astringent property. Now there's also wild black raspberry. Wild black raspberry, they look very similar, but you can tell the difference because the wild black raspberry has a reddish purplish stem and the undersides of this plant are silver.
See the difference?
Versus the wild blackberry is larger and it's not as silver. So wild black raspberry, same thing, you can use the leaves interchangeably with red raspberry leaf, and you can eat these delicious fruits. They have abundant wild fruits in the summertime. Delicious, 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 right?
And the other thing you can do, they have tannins in them, especially here, these blackberries, and they're great to add to like your ferments or when you're doing some of your canning, because it'll help keep the vegetables crisp because of the tannins. They're very high in tannins, so I like to use that for that.
She'll just snap off a couple leaves and then she'll put them right into the ferment or whatever like that. Just use them raw right off the plant there. So helps keep everything crisp, especially if you like those fermented carrots.
Aren't you guys learning lots of stuff, having a lot of fun? Well, now we're going to talk about the one plant in the fall that everyone sees that they think that they are having sinus attacks from. And that is
goldenrod, but it's really not goldenrod that's causing those sinus flare-ups or those allergies. That's ragweed, because it blooms 2 weeks prior to goldenrod. Everybody sees this blooming and they think they're allergic, but they're not. This is an antidote to it. You can make goldenrod tea, and it's a natural antidote to allergies in the fall.
So how would you do this? When you would dry this, how would you make your tea?
Well, unfortunately, they don't dry very well because then they want to go to seeds, so the seed balls fluff out. So you can make a fresh tincture with it, which is an alcohol extraction, or you can make a tea with the really, you can do this fresh as a tea right now, and then store it in ice cube trays. Make your tea, store it in ice cube trays, freeze them, and then you'll have goldenrod tea ready to pop out of the freezer. If you don't have a freezer, then you can just make a tincture, and has a long shelf life. You'll need to strain it after a month. Goldenrod tea or tincture works just fine, but it's unless you're going to get it before it blooms, when it's budding out, you can dehydrate it. But at this stage, fresh tea or tincture.
Because see, that's the thing, for a lot of people, they don't get it right at that time when they need to, so thank you for that. And this is bee balm.
Monarda fistulosa. This is an amazing aromatic plant. It's amazing for cold and flu supports. You can get the leaves. In the summer, you would want to harvest the flowers and the leaves for tea. What do you like to use it for?
Mostly for tea, definitely. It has a wonderful smell. Oh, I just love it. And it comes in the flowers are so many different colors. Around here, it's a very light, kind of like a lilac-y color.
But this time of year, you can go gather the seeds, and then you can have Monarda fistulosa growing in your own location.
You're around your house, in your garden, wherever you want to put it, because it will spread.
You can also dry it and add it to spice blends. It's a very delicious spice. It tastes like wild oregano.
Oregano, yeah. Sometimes they call it wild oregano.
Yeah.
Yep. All right, next we're going to talk about Yarrow,
Achillea millefolium. It's the lore where Achilles' heel, lore has it that Achilles' mother took him and dipped him by his ankle in a bath of yarrow. And when he came out, he was ready for battle. But where's the one place that yarrow bath didn't touch on his Achilles' heel? It's a wound healing herb. It used to be planted near battlefields to stop bleeding. It's a wound or bleed stop herb. So if you crush it and make a poultice out of it, you can put it on an open wound and stop the bleeding. Now, of course, if you cut to the bone, you need to go get some stitches and get that. Don't want to get an infection in there. This will not help you if you're cut to the bone. But it's an amazing internal and external, amazing medicinal herb. So it has antibacterial, antiviral properties, good for coughs and colds and respiratory conditions. You can make a tea, a tincture.
And it's very good to help break a fever. Mm. So if you're, you know, not feeling well, this is something that you could use too. And I know the white flowers are much more medicinal than the other flowers, right?
Yes. That's the true, Achillium millefolium is the true native, the yarrow native.
Because you'll see them in a lot of different colors, but the white one is the good one. And you find that all over in the fields, all over the place.
A lot of these poultices, like yarrow, what's another one?
Plantain.
You actually put them in your mouth and you chew them, get them kind of mushy and wet, and then you put them on your wound and stuff. That's what we did too when I broke my ribs. This stuff really works.
This next plant has a little nickname. They call it goosefoot because when the leaves are, you know, it's growing, it looks like a goosefoot. But what's it called?
Lamb's quarter.
Lamb's quarter.
It's in the Chenopodium family, so it has these leaves. And the cool part about these is when you put a drop of water on it, you can see the silver. They have trace elements of silver.
Oh, stop the presses. There it is, folks. Nice. There, I got you guys a sample. Now back to the program.
Another thing that I really love the lamb's quarter for is they call it wild spinach because it is more nutritious than spinach. And I love to take it and I'll go ahead and saute a bunch of it in with some butter and some onions, or I'll put it in with eggs, or I just put a few pieces and I put them in my salads. So I utilize this all summer long, spring long, and part of the fall when it's still around. But the one thing that you can do with it that I think is amazing is you get it throughout the year, because I let it grow forever, and I let it go in my garden beds, wherever it pops up, and then what I do is I harvest it and I dehydrate it and make it into a powder, and then that way, all throughout the winter months, I can put it in my soups and stews and get the nutritional value from it that way, too.
Yeah, and smoothies. You could even eat the seeds, too. So you could take these little seeds, pop them off, and grind them, dry them and grind them as flour. You can make crackers out of them. I have even seen a world-renowned chef take these little tiny seeds and pop them, and it makes the cutest little popcorns ever. It's adorable. So.
And you said he was doing them when they were still, they're green, right?
Yeah,
when they're like
green
this.
Or dried. So okay, you take the black seed in there and then just pop those tiny little seeds. It's a tedious process.
So I expect you guys to go find your lamb's quarter and try to do this, and I want to hear back from you. Speaking of crackers, this is a great one. So a lot of you guys, let's say you can't get flour anymore, you know? We're rationing for flour. This is Curly Dock. So right now, and during the fall months, it's all drying. These are the seed heads, and look what happens. I get my mortar and pestle, grind it all up, make it into like, powder, and then you can turn this into a wonderful cracker also.
Yeah. And you like to make flour out of it, right?
Yep. Works out great. And then that way, there you go. And for some of you guys that are gluten intolerant, this is a great alternative also.
And all of these seeds have, you know, phytonutrients and minerals and trace elements and all kinds of really nutritional benefits to them eating these seeds as well. So.
And the thing is a lot of, you'll see this Curly Dock, your Yellow Dock, all over the place. People are like, this is invasive, this is a weed. I like to call them wild herbs because they are so nutrient dense and they're just powerful things, and they're all around us. Now we got a good one here.
Ooh, burdock.
This is burdock, and you see it all over. It has a very, very deep taproot, very, very, very deep.
So this would be the giant leaf right here. The leaves get huge. They're heart-shaped and elongated. You can really tell it's burdock because they're fuzzy and big leaves. When they form the burrs, this is what the green burr looks like, and that's what the brown burr looks like.
So now, this time of year, you guys know these, when they get stuck on you, they're a nuisance. But this is actually where the idea of Velcro came from, was from these guys. And these are tons of little bitty seeds. But it's not just a plant that's a nuisance. What can you do with these leaves?
Yeah, so the young, tender leaves, when they're about this size, you can cook them up and eat them as a pot herb. You can just saute them or put them in soups and stews in the early spring. This you can't really do much with. I like to make a nice floral or a botanical print with it, roll some ink on there and print and stamp it. But the medicine is in the roots. It's historically used as a food in a lot of other countries. So they would eat it like they would a carrot, where they'll boil it or roast it, and it's a nutritional food source. But medicinally, it's a blood purifier, it's an antioxidant, it has so many nutritional values to it. It's a detox herb, so you can drink burdock tea and be really, really healthy from that burdock tea.
Oh, sure, when you can roast those. Well as the leaves are also good if you are making a poultice and you need to wrap something with it.
Yes.
I use leaves for that also.
This beauty is mullein. Do you have mullein growing here?
I don't have it around right around here. I'm glad you brought this because I've tried. It's really hard to get it started, and I want to try mullein. I have my friend around the corner that I get some from her. But this is a great one, especially this time of year if people are having coughs or flus, because it's good for your respiratory system.
Yeah, in the doctrine of signatures, they say that plants look like the organs that they have an affinity for healing. So this looks like a lung. So it's really amazing for lung support, like Stacy mentioned. It is phenomenal for healing soft lung tissue. So I put it in all the cold and flu tea blend remedies that I make. You can harvest it now or in the spring. I planted this in late spring, so it's ready now, but you can harvest it in the spring and summer along riverbanks. It is really amazing, and you could dry it out and make tea blends from it. Mullein, it's one of my favorite herbs. It gave my dad 4 extra years when he was diagnosed with lung cancer, almost 5 additional years, by drinking mullein tea and doing a lot of other modalities such as acupuncture and Chinese medicinal herbs. So he didn't go the chemo and radiation route. We went the mullein route and the route to alternative health. He was juicing every day and doing organic foods, and the doctors gave him 6 months to live. He was a Vietnam veteran, so he was at the VA hospital. They gave him 6 months to live, and he lived an additional 5 years with alternative medicine and healthy foods.
Next we have, what's this little beauty called?
Red clover. And historically it's been used to shrink ovarian cysts as a medicinal herb. It is really wonderful for menstrual support. I love it because it has this little tiny butterfly. This is called the calyx of it, and it attracts butterflies and bees. And look at what the calyx looks like. It looks like a butterfly. It's so cute. So red clover, you can put it in tea blends. You can eat the petals. They're edible. You can eat the leaves in the springtime. They're edible and medicinal, full of phytonutrients.
It's always good. I dry it out, keep it in my jars, and I always have it handy. Is one that you have all over your yard, pretty much. So it's all over. People think it's invasive, but I let mine go and I have it everywhere, and it is plantain.
There's many different types of plantains. There's broadleaf plantain like this one. There's the native plantain. There's narrow leaf plantain. They can all be used interchangeably.
The purple. There's different ones. So they may look a little different depending where you live in the country or in the world, actually. But plantain is one of those things where you're out in the field and let's say you got a scratch or you got stung by a bee or something like that. All you do is take a little bit of it. Would it do it?
Yeah, oh, I'll do it for you.
Gonna break it down a little bit.
And this is where you can put your saliva on it too to activate those enzymes, or you can just keep it simple and rub it between your hands. You want those green juices. If it's not juicy, it's not going to work. So you want to juice it with your compress.
I hurt my finger. You got to put it on there. So that's where the bee stung me.
And then we could wrap it
with a burdock leaf. There you go. And we're good. And you can tie it around. There you go. You made a Band-Aid, and it's going to help the pain, and it's going to be antiseptic. It's everything about it, and it works great. And That way you have a little emergency care out in the field.
I've heard success stories with brown recluse spider bites, so put that plantain juice right on it, right when it happens. If you notice you have a brown recluse bite, put it right on there.
Well, and the thing is it heals. It starts the cell healing so quickly. I cut myself very, very badly not that long ago. Like, the whole side of my finger was already coming off of my finger. And then I went ahead and did this, wrapped it really good, and it healed so quickly. Mm-hmm. So it does work. It's one of those things that, you know, with my grandkids here, I know with your family, you use this and it really works.
This is a psyllium seed husk. It's part of the plantain. The outer portion of the seed coat is considered psyllium seed husk, and that is good for increasing mucilaginous qualities within your respiratory tract or your digestive tract. So it's going to help with constipation, sore throats. It's going to soften and moisten those tissues and act as a demulcent. So it's a really good one to have as well.
So when you do this, tell everybody how you dry it out and all that to use it
for. So you can pop them off like this and then just dry them out and store them in a jar. Or if you need them right away, you can use them fresh. And I like to dry them out and then shake them in a coffee can. Make sure there's no coffee in there. Shake them in a coffee can to get that seed husk out. And then I just sift them through a sifter.
Because people spend big money on supplements to buy the psyllium husk. They do.
Yes, they do.
And then another thing you can do, these leaves taste great. They have a really nice flavor. I use them all in my salads. Or you can use them on sandwiches sometimes if you don't have lettuce. So it's a great alternative. Just run out to your yard. Get some, make sure they're clean, and then you can add them to your salads. So does anyone know what this one is? They came with a vengeance early in spring, and now they're kind of coming back here in fall here in Missouri. What does it look like to you guys? Rawr! It's a lion's tooth. They call it dentalion or dandelion. And dandelions are an amazing herb.
Super medicinal, high in antioxidants. I think it's one of the most medicinal plants on the planet.
Yes.
And it's one of the most abundant. It's in everybody's front yard, backyard. I don't understand why people spray it. It's good for the bees. It's good for humans. It provides food and abundant medicine. Please don't spray them.
I'll tell you why they spray them. It's training, right? They've been trained to think that something so good for them is so bad for them. Get that out of your yard, they've been trained. The parents used to send them out there, get those dandelions out of the yard. You'd have to go out there and pick them out of the yard by hand. Then they moved on to the chemicals, right? We've been taught how not to use nature as our food and medicine. So we're trying to reverse that right here, right now.
These dandelion, the greens, it's what we would call like a bitter herb. It's great to help start the digestion process. So by eating these, you know, if you had a salad or something, it's a great way to start the digestive process, because most of us these days are having problems with that area, right?
What's the Bible say about bitter herbs?
That you need to have bitter herbs in your meals.
That's right.
It's good to add some type of bitter food. Is so wonderful for your digestion, like arugula and things like that. But this is a great thing. I love to saute these. I use them fresh. You can make a really, really good salad. It's in my cookbook, actually, with dates and goat cheese. It's really, really yummy. But as well as the greens, you can use the whole entire plant. You can use the root. You can use the flowers. I love to make like iced tea with the flower.
Yeah, and then you jellies.
Dandelion jelly, dandelion wine.
Oh, yeah.
So you can do a lot. The whole plant is. And then you can also use the root by roasting the root and then turning that into, it's like a good alternative to coffee. It's a great detoxifier.
So if you can't get your coffee, you start digging your roots, roasting them up with some honey on them. It makes a really amazing beverage. And you can tincture the roots to make a bitters digestive blend that you just need a taste to get that digestive system, as you were saying, activated. So it's a phenomenal plant. All right. What is this one?
What is that one?
It's the
violet. Yeah.
It's a little violet. And the leaves are edible and the flowers are edible. It's amazing. So you can use the leaves in a tea. It's a demulcent, so it soothes and softens those mucous membranes. The violets, you can decorate cakes and cookies and cupcakes and make violet jelly and violet syrup.
And they taste good. They taste really good. Yes.
So many wonderful uses. It's rich in phytonutrients and vitamins and minerals. So many cool things to do with the violets. And guess what? They just started blooming again in the fall. They usually bloom only in the spring. I've never seen this happen where they bloom in the fall. So it's a tricky little season here. It's November.
Yay, almost. So it's a special treat. Love those violets.
Beauty right here. It's a little shriveled up, but imagine that having all these little spider-like flower tendrils and petals that come out. This is a passion flower, but it's a Missouri native passion flower, and this is the passion fruit. It is beautiful and wonderful, and you can eat it. It has wonderful citrus-like taste to it. It's not quite ripe yet, but what happens is it forms pulp all around its seeds, and you can get the juiciness of that pulp and then save all the seeds to plant next winter. So can you believe passion fruit grows here in the Midwest? Passion fruit grows in a lot of places, but this is Passiflora incarnata. It's a nervine and a mild sedative, so you can use the leaves and the flowers for tea. Just as you would chamomile, it helps to promote rest and relaxation and a restful night's sleep.
Yeah, I like to make a tea blend out of, I was telling you earlier, with chamomile and the passion flower and the catnip.
All right, that's a wrap for today's foraging for food and medicine video. Hope you guys got some nuggets out of this one. I'm standing deep in our apple tree. We just were able to harvest all of our apples, well, most of them, right before this hard frost that we got. So we just want to show you guys, man, we've been programmed, right? We've been programmed to deny nature. We've been programmed just to look at it from afar and not to participate in it. And so we're trying to help you guys get back to this stuff, right? God said he'd give us everything to be our food and our medicine, and he wasn't joking around. So we have to take this stuff serious. So if you want to see Crystal, she'll be at our Homesteading Life Conference in Hannibal, Missouri next year, 2023. We only have about 40 more tickets left. It's a 500 person event. It's really a good time. You know, we do a lot of hands-on training there. We bring speakers in from all over, and we get nothing but great reviews about it. So if you want to see her talk and us talk and some other folks talk and try to help you guys navigate through this crazy time we're living in, then that might be a good resource for you. HomesteadingLifeConference.com. And also, we want to very definitely put a disclaimer in this video. And to come a little closer so I can tell you, do not forage until you are confident and that you've studied the plants in your local area. It can be dangerous, right? Some of these plants, like the sumac, just like we showed you the sumac that has the white berries and the red berries, they look fairly similar, but one could really mess you up, okay? So make sure you're comfortable with your foraging in your local area. Get some books. Hunting the Wild Asparagus is good, Yule Gibbons. There's several other good books out there. Just make sure you're educated. You know, just don't dive right in. You know, some stuff like the dandelion and that kind of stuff is going to be easy for you, but just make sure you're doing your homework, right? We don't want anyone getting sick. We just want you guys to know that there's food everywhere out there and medicine waiting for you. And just think about it. Big Pharma knows this, and what they do is they go to the plants and they try to figure out what it is in there, like this magic secret ingredient, when it's not that. It's everything together, okay? And they try to take that out, and then they synthesize it and they put it into a pill and then they sell it to you. Just like Stacy said, they pay big money for those shells off of the plantain, right? And there it is. It's all over your yard for free. Just takes a little effort. So that's the big disclaimer, right? We're not doctors. We don't play none on YouTube. But just be careful when you're foraging out there. Make sure you know your plants and you do your homework. See you guys at the Homesteading Life Conference 2023. Or maybe we'll see you out somewhere. We got some neat things to talk about, so we're coming. I'm sorry. Took us a second to post a video, but we were really super busy with the fall harvest and also lining up 2023 for you guys. Okay, we got some big plans for you guys. All right, we'll see you on the next video. Hit that thumbs up if you haven't, and subscribe to our channel for more tips and tricks.